Chapter 1. The last Travellers' Inn on the road from Inverness was no place to die. Freezing rain lashed the window panes as I huddled over a warm bowl of soup in a corner of the inn's ground floor tavern. Across the table, Montgomery rubbed a scar on his arm and stared out the window, scanning the muddy road for signs that we were being pursued. In the upstairs room, just over our heads, locked away from the other patrons, Edward lay dying. I rested my hands on Montgomery's anxious ones. We're safe here. No one would come after us this far north. Beneath the worn canvas shirt and the pistol strapped to his side was the young man I'd agreed to marry. His silver ring circled my finger, scuffed and dented after our escape from London. For the past 3 days, Lucy, Edward and I had huddled in the back of the carriage, while Montgomery and Balthazar had driven us through snow and rain without complaint, north to Elizabeth von Stein's estate, Ballantyne Manor, where we hoped to hide. I threaded my fingers through Montgomery's. My hands were cold, as always. His were warm and solid. They belonged to a surgeon, not a servant, but I suppose it didn't matter any more. Now, like me, he was simply a fugitive. He turned back to the window.
I keep thinking the police will find us.
We didn't leave any evidence for them to trace. Besides, Elizabeth stayed behind to make certain they don't suspect us. They've no reason to tie us to the deaths?
Deaths. Murders is what I should have said.
Just days ago, in the King's College's basement laboratories, we had brought to life 5 of Father's water tank creatures that had then slaughtered the most dangerous members of the King's Club. I could still picture the blood seeping from a gash on Dr. Hastings' neck. Montgomery and I hadn't yet spoken of what had happened at King's College, though I knew the violence of it bothered him deeply. It had been terrible, but necessary, a fact we didn't quite seem to agree on. We were very thorough, I added in a dry voice. A dark look crossed his face. He started to answer, but the sound of laughter drowned out his voice. Annoyed, I turned to the inn's fireplace, where a dozen red-faced men and women in gaudy satin clothes swapped stories and pints of beer. They were part of a travelling carnival troupe, following the winter fair circuit, and were the only patrons sharing the inn with us. A scraggly-haired woman finished telling a ghost story with a loud belch, and the others roared with laughter. I didn't realise how tensely I was holding my muscles until Montgomery leaned in.
"Ignore them," he said.
"It's nonsense," I muttered, "telling ghost stories. There's enough in this world that's frightening. Only the ignorant would scare themselves on purpose." Overhead, a floorboard creaked, and I sat straighter, watching the ceiling, wondering how Edward was doing. Days had passed, and yet I hadn't come to terms with the fact that he'd poisoned himself. He had tried to end his life before, misguided attempts to kill the monster inside him, but the beast had always been too strong. It hadn't been until the very end, when Edward and the beast had nearly melded into one, that he'd been able to force arsenic down his own throat. He'd have been dead in hours if Montgomery hadn't stolen drugs from a chemist's shop outside of Liverpool to counterbalance the worst of the poison's effects. It wasn't a cure, but it was a chance. Now, overcome by delirium and fever, he was caught somewhere between life and death, between being Edward and being the beast. Lucy was up there now, tending to him at his bedside, while Balthazar stood guard outside the door. The floorboards stopped shifting, and I relaxed. I leaned forward, letting my hair screen my face, and toyed with the ring on my finger.